came across a poem by the German-American author and poet Charles Bukowski. He has a poem where the first line is, "Style is the answer to everything." And if you only had that much, it's very paradoxical and perplexing. It's from 1974. "Style is the answer to everything. A fresh way to approach a dull or dangerous thing. To do a dull thing with style is preferable to doing a dangerous thing without it. To do a dangerous thing with style is what I call art. Bullfighting can be an art. Boxing can be an art. Loving can be an art. Opening a can of sardines can be an art. Not many have style. Not many can keep style. I've seen dogs with more style than men, although not many dogs have style. Cats have it with abundance." "Or sometimes people give you style. Joan of Arc had style. John the Baptist, Jesus, Socrates, Caesar, Garcia Lorca. I've met men in jail with style. I've met more men in jail with style than men out of jail. Style is the difference, a way of doing, a way of being done. Six herons standing quietly in a pool of water, or you naked walking out of the bathroom without seeing me." The end. So this poem delves into the notion of style as a profound expression of individuality and resilience in the face of life's challenges. It's almost as if the challenge of life, the pain of life, is what reveals what our style is. And Bukowski illustrates this through various examples in the poem, but the essence is how life imitates art and art imitates life, and life is the act of creation itself. At the end of that poem, this line about the herons and the person walking naked, it's like true style is not a conscious effort, nor is it a deliberate display, but it's something that is natural or unorchestrated. We sometimes limit style to fashion. We also think of it, I think, as a display of wealth or extravagance. But in a deeper sense, it is the landscape of our inner world made visible to the outer world. I love this quote. I have another quote brought up here from Helena Bonham Carter, the actor. "I think everything in life is art. What you do, how you dress, the way you love someone, and how you talk, your smile and your personality, what you believe in, and all your dreams, the way you drink your tea, or how you decorate your home or party, your grocery list, the food you make, how your writing looks, and the way you feel. Life is art." So again, I've been exploring that against the backdrop of our modern society to understand its power, the power of style, as an antidote to superfluous materialism and superficial, almost robotic machinations of pretentiousness related to a society that's hell-bent on technological progress, but is encumbered by chaos, as it's impossible to uniformly move citizens through education and through work and so on from birth to death. Style is the answer. What are the questions that it answers? It's not a literal statement, but it's a philosophical one. And one question is, how do we express our individuality? What is someone up against trying to be themselves? What makes art impactful? And now it's about the democratization of style. But that's not how you get style. That is the antithesis to style. And although it sounds nice that we let everybody, you know, have a say, I want the artist to show me what's possible. I don't want to tell the artist what to, that's something different. That's commerce. And it's not that commerce is wrong or that business is wrong. It's that it doesn't work with getting something unique that moves us for all time. So that's what I think makes art impactful. And on any level, in terms of the way that you do anything, when you make a sandwich for somebody, when you write a note for your spouse, you ever had a handwritten letter that you save in your house? Why do you save it? In a way, and in a place that might be different than an email, because you want to look at the pen on the paper. You want to see the writing itself, because it happened at that time by that person's hand. And there's something so touching about that. How can we do this? How can we live authentically? What does that even mean? Bukowski, though, championed living unapologetically. I think that's where there was some kind of overlooked spirituality to it, embracing one's flaws and virtues. The very things that we think hold us back from being creative with whatever it is, taking photos. I don't have a good camera. I don't know how to use a good camera. Or I don't know how to play music, or I don't have a good voice. Dylan didn't have a good voice. Dylan couldn't play like Jimi Hendrix, and Jimi Hendrix couldn't write lyrics like Bob Dylan, but he played his songs, right? So there's some deep respect there by just simply being what you are. Bob Dylan doesn't need to have a beautiful melodic voice, because he's a Nobel laureate now, which means we just look at the lyrics without any music, it's still amazing. You know, and if we just hear Jimmy's playing without words, it's unreal. It's so authentic. Why? Because he was left-handed, and guitars at that time were made for the dominant experience, which is a right-handed life. The world is made for right-handed people. Anyone left-handed in here? Okay, so you know, right? When you're writing, because we write, unlike Arabic, we write left to right. When the left-handed person is doing it, they're covering up what they're writing. So you kind of got good probably going like this. It's a right-handed world. But for Jimmy, he's like, I ain't going to play a left-handed instrument. I'm going to play a right-handed instrument upside down. And because of that, his fingerings and everything are different. It's not the way you would ordinarily approach the guitar, with the bass string where the first string would be on a right-handed instrument. What is the essence of whatever we're trying to say? The note, the sandwich, the conversation. These can all be our way of saying, I love you, through our own unique expression. And we forget this sometimes when we do anything, if we do it mechanically. It's better to do less, but to do it like wholeheartedly, or as Confucius said, wherever you go, go with your whole heart. And then how do we find beauty in this world? I think it's the answer in the way that it was for people like Socrates, who was put to death essentially because he was teaching free thinking instead of the orthodoxy in Athens that everything is ordained by the gods. His death is like the paragon of authenticity. It's why we remember him almost above all of the Greek philosophers. This isn't to say that's what's at stake. It's only to say that when we think about all the things that are hard, we have all of these examples from history. And sometimes the thing that's hard is only hard in our own mind. Or when it comes to war and chaos and violence, the leaders are like, well, they're all men getting into the war. So you have the theme of patriarchy, but they're not men. They're boys with an undeveloped psychology, and only thinking in terms of conformity and in terms of the way a child would think about it. Violence, tantrums, bullying. And it would take style for a great leader of any nation, of any people, to communicate with authenticity, with courage, with love, with compassion, with their own diplomacy. Everything has to be mapped on to the orthodoxy. So that's why it's hard to get genuine progress, because everybody is just in those positions of power are just trying to hold on to power. And how do we define success? Style gives us an alternative to that, which goes beyond commercial success, but the reward of being true to yourself. And ultimately, how do we confront mortality? I think much of Bukowski's work contemplates death. And how do we deal with that and the finiteness of life? Most people just avoid this. And death, I call the last taboo, because families don't talk about death. Most families don't know what the preferences are of their loved ones, which means we don't have the rituals in place anymore and the elders in place and accessible to deal with our mortality. And art is a big part of this, and so is ritual and initiation into the stages of life and through the stages of life. But style, at least, gives us a way to bring humor, acceptance, and grace and dignity, a kind of grit and resilience. That we would make art in a paradigm where we're going to die at any moment is sort of a way of saying, I'm going to fully jump into this experience, but that I understand what the rules are. When people go on vacation, it's like, I'm going to do this in style because you know it's finite. You go all out. The word style refers to the mode or the characteristic quality of whatever a person does. That's your style. But the word itself is derived from Latin stylus, which meant the writing instrument. And this explains why the special tool for the tablets is called a stylus pen. As that word evolved into English, it referred to the way you write. And I think that's special because you can only write the way you write unless you're trying to write like somebody else, unless you're imitating a particular hand style. It doesn't take any effort to write your name the way you write your name. When I walk through the vendors, I notice Max Golden, who's a hypnotist at one of the tables, and he called me over and asked if I would like to have my handwriting analyzed. And I was already thinking about, you know, the origins of style. And I'm like, this is a good synchronicity. So he showed me how my T's and D's in cursive tend to have loops, and how it's hard sometimes for me to be authentic because I get into a little bit of a loop in my head when I wonder, how will my family really be okay with me saying that on my podcast? Or what will my job think if I talk about some of these political issues? Or will people not want to be my friend anymore? I think about it. It doesn't hold me back, but I do spend a little more time than he was identifying. I actually want to, and that was true. So it's amazing how much you can actually uncover about both your style in the handwriting and the barriers to you truly living your style. Bukowski also has a famous saying, which is simply, don't try, carved on his gravestone. Don't try. Now that sounds paradoxical again, because you could think it means don't apply yourself, don't even participate. No, I think it refers to the art life, which means you don't have to try to be yourself. You only have to try to not be yourself. And it all comes back to the handwriting style. And it breaks down at other levels of society. Of course, you're going to write your name the way you write your name. But will you love the way you are meant to love? Or will you do it in a way that is expected of you? Can you be what you are in politics? Can you be what you are in your work? Or are the pressures to conform so great that you have to try to do that to the detriment of who you really are? And depending on the context, that's going to affect one's mental health. Embrace your authenticity, because that is the one thing where all trying is futile. The French author Jules Renard wrote that style is to forget all styles. Almost like Bruce Lee, who preached no style as his style. But he first had to learn a lot of styles. I think that reflects our conditioning. We're taught a religion, we're taught a way of life, we're taught the customs, we're taught a culture, we're taught a particular kind of food, manners and politeness. And then over time, we start to unlearn those things if we really want to be true to ourselves. Societal norms and expectations can heavily influence us. And fear of judgment, that's kind of programmed from evolution. If I say something that's a little bit different than the group think, and they don't like it, and I'm on my own, that's tantamount to death for our ancestors. So this is where social anxiety comes from, and why the number one fear in America is public speaking. It's not really that dangerous. There's a lot more dangerous occupations out there. But it would have been dangerous for our predecessors. Confidence is another one. The overwhelm from choices. Kids these days see so many things, they don't know what they're meant to do. Commercialization again and comparison. External and internal censorship. Everything is watching us through our phones, recording our TV, you see it in all the algorithms. People end up censoring themselves. I thought of style as an acronym. S could stand for suffering. We think about some really authentic people like Socrates or Frida Kahlo. Her life was a life of pain and suffering. Her relationship was abusive and tumultuous, led to alcoholism, to cope with that, to cope with the pain. And yet, she was able to communicate, not just in her paintings, but in her writings, in her style, in her fashion, in the way she spoke, an enduring legacy of creativity. Tenacity. Living what is true for you is going to take some grit, and it's going to take some resilience against going against the grain of family, society. Not all the time, but it won't always map on to the norms and standards. And so the why is all about yourself. What are you? What's true for you? If you were to reflect on the most joyful moment of your life, what would that story be? What were you doing? Who were you with? And what stands in the way of you achieving more of that? Limitation. There's always some constraint. Like Miles Davis wanted to play fast like Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie, but he just couldn't do it naturally. And eventually he accepted that and wrote the album Birth of the Cool, which transformed jazz, and so did Kinda Blue, and so did Bitches Brew. And it was all his quintessential style. Calm, cool Miles, but with a quiet defiance, a quiet rage that he expressed through the horn with the mute. Or like athletes. Tom Brady is not the best athlete, but by embracing his limitations and mastering the pocket, he becomes the greatest quarterback. Or in basketball, you know, somebody is athletic or somebody is a better shooter. And when you embrace your limitations, that becomes your authenticity. So again, with whatever it is that you care about and whatever you feel limits you, let that be the very thing that makes you special. If you can only take photos with some crappy camera, well, what's meaningful about that? How does that present a certain way of seeing the world where your limitation becomes your style? That was my case with playing the banjo in the Giving Tree Band. The band needed a banjo, but I didn't really have any training on the banjo. I had some classical guitar training, and I just accepted it's okay for me to play in the only way that I'm good at. And even if it doesn't sound like what I think the banjo is supposed to sound like, if I can make it work for me, it'll create an authentic sound for us. And it did. And then evolution. Style is a dynamic process, and one can fall into the trap, as many artists do, of imitating their previous work. Once a man had a bunch of Picassos that were disputed as authentic Picassos, so he was able to arrange a meeting with Picasso to show him and to get him to sign a certification form of authenticity. And when Picasso saw the work, he said, these aren't Picassos. Not because he didn't paint them, but because he was trying to imitate himself when he did. And this is the problem with branding in social media. Branding is antithetical to originality. Branding is trying to redo to keep something inartistic but consistent. You may remember this movie, this Peter Pan adaptation, a film in the early 90s by Spielberg called Hook. And Dustin Hoffman is playing Captain Hook, and Robin Williams is playing Peter Pan, who's lost the childhood wonder of the Lost Boys, but he rediscovers it. And Captain Hook has this adherence to style, which he calls form. And he says, this is good form, this is bad form. And it's almost satirical and humorous because a villainous pirate, but he has a style. This is a way, I think, of understanding the arc of human style in terms of its analogy or its synonym of form. Good form just simply means that was true to you. And Captain Hook is saying to Peter, good form, when Peter lets him go at the end, because that's your style. That's not my style, but it's good form because it's your style. It's true to you. You're not trying to be something you're not. And I thought that was a really neat part of the film. But here's the arc of style. It begins with uniform. There's an orthodoxy with pop music. It's got to be 3 minutes, got to have these features, got to have this chorus, this refrain, this kind of rhyme scheme. Even though music is unlimited, but the powers that be trap it into a narrow range. There's a uniform that we wear when we work. There's a uniform in how we can talk in the employer's place. There's a uniform to where we can go, how we can live. Then the second form is conform. Because there's some orthodoxy, there are pressures to conform, to censor, to guide, to herd the population to be consistent, to be coherent. Because there's a fear from the hegemon that if people were too free, too individualistic, or too creative, it would topple the power structure. Then there is perform. Once you have the uniform and the pressure to conform, sometimes those pressures are as strong as censorship and imprisonment. Sometimes it's just taboo. Then a person has to perform. Organizations make you perform. From birth, we're born in an organization. When we die with the help of an organization. In between, we represent organizations. We belong to organizations, interacting and fighting and warring with other organizations. And we forget sometimes how to locate ourselves in that chaos. So the performance is the facade. And when a person starts to have an awakening, a spiritual awakening or an artistic awakening, they must deform. Now, ordinarily we think of deform as destructive, but in this case, deform means the rebellion, the breaking away from the orthodoxy. Maybe like me, you had to break away from your religion, not because I oppose it all, but because it was my conditioning. I didn't have any other way to be. And I didn't realize that till later in life. And same with art. I grew up with what was on the radio. Only when I went to Georgetown and started spending lots of time in the library, diving in to the avant-garde, did I discover that there was something else inside of me that didn't have a voice out in the world yet. So after deform comes freeform. Now a person is unplugged from the system of thought, the system of religion, or the system of politic, and experiments. That's where the real style starts to emerge. And then the last one is reform. Once a person becomes really fluent in their style, it becomes a new style, and it becomes an imitated style. So much of the jazz that I hear on the radio or on the apps is academic. Kids who have studied the previous jazz innovators. So it's not really innovative because it's imitative, where jazz by definition is avant-garde, is exploratory, is always pushing the boundaries. That becomes the new orthodoxy. If you're on a path in creativity with your hobby, with anything in life, and you find that this path is quite easy, you're probably walking in the footsteps of somebody else. True style has no path. It's a pathless land. But when you complete it through your tenacity, through your suffering, through your evolution, you create a path. You blaze a trail.